Hey there, my name's Jared Holt, and welcome to Shitpost. This is a podcast at the intersection of tech, politics, and culture. Every other week, I bring on a guest from that intersecting realm who I think is doing interesting work or has an interesting perspective on current events. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on the player of your choice and check out the newsletter on our Substack page. There's a link to that and more down in the description of this episode. This is an episode about cryptocurrency and non-fungible tokens, which are best known as NFTs broadly. And let me lay it out from the top that I and my guests are very strong skeptics of this kind of financial vehicle, if you will. If you don't know what an NFT is, most people know what cryptocurrency is, but an NFT is a little different. And here's the gist. It's a unique piece of data. And that could be a picture or a song represented in some way on a blockchain. Usually that blockchain is Ethereum, which is less popular than Bitcoin, but still a major contender in cryptocurrency overall. These aren't a type of cryptocurrency, but rather they are bought with cryptocurrency, usually Ethereum, since that's the most common blockchain you find them on. From there, they can be traded, resold, or held onto by collectors. Being on a blockchain means that transactions and purchases of these NFTs are public-facing, in an impossible-to-change public ledger. The people hyping NFTs say this returns concepts like scarcity and ownership to a otherwise digital free-for-all world. And that is good? At least that's what the people advocating NFTs are telling artists, anyway. The model's being pitched to them as a way of reclaiming the methods that made their businesses tick in spite of an internet where content is infinitely copied and remixed. It's not a totally honest representation of exactly what is happening in these marketplaces, but we'll get to that later. This concept has made recent waves in months, with big-name celebrities and artists coming into the fold. There was one particularly painful promotion of NFTs on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. This is a conversation between Jimmy Fallon and Paris Hilton.
And you said you got a MoonPay, so I went and I copied you and did the same thing.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
This is your ape.
Yeah, we debuted. It's really cool. Like the hat, the shades.
Now, how did you pick? Because you can pick your ape.
Yes, I was going through a lot of them, and I was like, I want something that like kind of reminds me of me, but this one does. I think we made like another version of it where he takes the hat off and blonde hair comes out.
Yeah, because you can do it now, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm, animated version.
We're part of the same community. We're both apes.
I love it.
This is my ape.
It's yours. Yours is so cool. I love the red heart sunglasses. I love the captain hat.
It reminded me of me a little bit because I wear striped shirts. Mm-hmm. I've worn these heart sunglasses because my daughter's just as...
As forced as this conversation felt, it's not an anomaly. Crypto has been pushed by all kinds of influential figures, even Kim Kardashian to her more than 250 million Instagram followers. Tom Brady plugged his reputation on a company. So did Matt Damon. Leaders in cities like Miami and New York have made declarative statements in support of this industry. And if you watched the Super Bowl on Sunday, you likely saw a handful of ads for various cryptocurrency marketplaces and apps, including that one where a QR code bounced around the screen with no other information. As good as I consider my information security around here, I'm a bit ashamed to admit that I scanned that code. So why are more and more celebrities and influential figures hopping into this racket? These bids can sometimes seem genuine, but often they feel deeply cynical. NFTs and cryptocurrency, broadly speaking, have serious problems. The marketplace that enables them is wildly speculative and unregulated, and it's full of scam after scam after scam, and that's just to name a few issues. And given those plainly obvious risks, why is Web3, the work-in-progress vision of the next generation of internet, relying so heavily on this kind of technology? As the profile of cryptocurrency and NFTs have risen, so has its criticisms. Joining the show this week, I have Jacob Silverman. He's a staff writer at The New Republic. And I found his criticisms of this industry to be particularly salient. Late last year, Jacob and his partner in skepticism, Ben McKenzie, wrote a piece in Slate magazine specifically addressing celebrities' absorption of cryptocurrency. Jacob, welcome to the show. And you wrote that piece back in December. And I kind of feel like things have got worse since then.
Hi, well, thanks for having me. Yeah, in a way, we were a little early to the game. So just to get people up to speed, I've been writing a bit about crypto with the actor Ben McKenzie, Ryan Atwood on The OC, and other shows. And, you know, we're very focused on fraud and sort of the deception in the market, how ordinary people are getting hurt. And he's, of course, as a lot of us are, but kind of out of self-interest, if anything, you know, he's curious about why are his fellow actors and celebrities shilling this stuff? And why doesn't anyone seem to be saying anything except for him and a couple other people? I mean, I think Busy Phillips on her podcast the other day was criticizing it. And it's amazing. It's really only a couple people with any sort of margin of fame who are willing to criticize this stuff. I do think that in some ways that we were a little early to the sort of celebrity backlash thing and wondering, you know, what's happening here. We both got a little worked up at the Matt Damon commercial when I think it started airing during the World Series or maybe during the baseball playoffs. And we were watching that. So that's sort of what inspired the article. But you're right. It just seems to be more and more every week. And you can see how these relationships are probably increasingly brokered. And you know, no celebrity just goes on OpenSea and buys an NFT.
Right.
That's done. You know, there's a deal in place to do that and everything's specified. So I think that's why I'm interested in the celebrity stuff is just like, you know, who's paying who? Where's the money coming from? Why are they doing this? Why is someone like Matt Damon doing this when he has already, you know, $100 or $200 million fortune? So there are a lot of interesting questions there, I think.
Gun to my head, you will not convince me that Paris Hilton gives a single shit about a picture of an ape on the blockchain.
Yeah, like, it was a pretty stilted appearance on Fallon.
Yeah.
But she probably increased the value of that ape.
Yeah, no kidding. So I feel like this conversation could easily be hours long if we got into all the nuances, but I'm going to like try to keep us in time the best I can. I thought it would be interesting to hear your perspective as somebody who's really scrutinized this closely. Like, can you give me your best rehash of the pitch that different crypto companies and marketplaces are making to the public? And I guess in turn, these celebrities are making to the public.
Yeah, so the simple pitch is probably get rich quick. You know, it's supposed to be a new asset class in general, crypto, and a new form of money, somehow more liberating and emancipatory and kind of democratic than the U.S. dollar or the mainstream U.S. banking system. I think that is sort of the pitch is kind of a fun way to make money and experience a new kind of financial and monetary freedom. If you drill down into it for more than a second, of course, you start to see all the many problems with this industry. But, you know, as it's presented on a surface level, it can be very appealing, I think.
Well, let's drill into some of those problems. How does the vision of cryptocurrency and NFTs being sold to the public differ from the reality of these investments? If we even want to call them investments, really. Like, what kind of message does it send people when people like Jimmy Fallon and Justin Bieber and Tom Brady are dropping all this money on JPEGs or I guess like a receipt for a JPEG. And,
right.
You know, what do potential consumers maybe seeing some of these commercials or encountering some of this stuff need to know before they really think about going into this?
Well, for one thing, you need to know that you can lose everything. That's just a matter of fact. And that's happened to a lot of people. Either because the exchange gets hacked, their account gets hacked, the things that they're investing in go down to zero. You know, we do use words like investing or assets, which may not accurately describe what's going on here, but we go with it. But a lot of the stuff is more like gambling, and it's like gambling in a casino where you don't actually really know the rules or who you're playing against, and when the casino might shut down at any time or the lights might go out while you're sitting at the table. I don't think people necessarily realize how volatile the crypto industry is on pretty much every level. But to start with, the price of these assets and these markets run 24/7. You can't really trust them as not being manipulated. There's certainly some investigations going on with some of the big exchanges like Binance. The problem also with, broadly speaking, with crypto and Web3 is it does a lot of the opposite of what it claims to do. So Actually, I talked to someone today who's Bennett Tomlin. He has a great podcast about crypto. He said that a lot of the crypto people are sort of doing a speed run of the last 2,000 years of financial and monetary history. So what you see a lot in crypto is sort of, you know, they present everything as decentralized and freeing and without intermediaries and central authorities. But then, you know, as soon as something goes wrong, you have to kind of invoke, you have to find an authority to help you, whether it's the police or you contact the exchange, who's then going to try to make you whole, perhaps. And so I think what we're seeing is kind of that speed run of financial history and experimentation happening. There really is a parallel financial system or quasi-parallel being set up by the Web3 people with its own currency, its own markets, its own banks, its own lending practices. I mean, pretty much everything across the board. I mean, it's not nearly enough to challenge the supremacy of fiat, despite what they might hope. But I think it's important to just see that this is a much more volatile, chaotic, and potentially, you know, lose everything type of market than anything you would encounter probably on the stock market or in kind of mainstream finance. And that goes for most people who are involved in this market, not just people who are taking deliberate risks.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about these risks here. One risk that you mentioned a while ago is hacking. There's certainly tons of scams in cryptocurrency. You know, this promise of a get-rich-quick thing can be alluring. And there's plenty of people in the space willing to just swindle you out of your dough. Are there really any guardrails here in this industry, or is this just kind of the Wild West at this point? I mean, I imagine at some point these guardrails will necessarily have to come up. Otherwise, you know, these companies like Binance or Coinbase or whatever are going to, they're not going to want to actually have to rectify anything. So like, are those guardrails there right now? And if they are, if they aren't, like, what is sort of the consequence of that?
I would say they're not. Ben and I are actually working on a piece that hopefully will be on the next couple of weeks about Binance and a lawsuit against them. Basically, Binance has had a number of outages, but there's one in particular on May 19th of last year where some folks said that they thought either through malice or negligence, basically locked out of their accounts and unable to trade. And they lost everything. They were liquidated because of the trades that they put in place and because of this big shift in the market that happened while they were locked out. But in that kind of case, the people who were complaining to Binance, and this is hundreds or thousands of people, were offered either nothing or meager credits to trade more on the platform or things like that, like nothing to actually make them whole. And, you know, there's no insurance there. Most of the stuff is unregulated and offshore, or if it's in America, it's in a legal gray area or a regulatory gray area. There really are no established procedures to really do anything when something goes wrong. I mean, literally every week you have an 8 or 9 figure hack from a DeFi protocol. There was one a couple of weeks ago, I believe it was that Wormhole? I'm getting them mixed up now, but that was over $300 million. And, you know, it was going to threaten the whole Solana ecosystem, when Solana is sort of a rising blockchain and cryptocurrency. And then you had this company Jump Trading, which is one of these very quiet firms, but makes a hell of a lot of money, supposedly, trading on the big platforms. It's basically high frequency trading in crypto. And they came in and they were the main investor owner of the company that was hacked for $300 million, and they just made it whole. So I think that says something also about how the industry operates. It's about self-interest. It's about connections and favoritism. It's not about procedures or what the law or custom dictates or what insurance calls for. It's so, you know, a company decided, hey, we're going to get you $300 million worth of Ethereum tomorrow, which is pretty amazing, because this is a huge problem for us. But of course, it was presented as they were helping the community. So I think when you talk about these reversals and how crypto talks and how it presents itself, you have to be skeptical for words like community or the actions of a big company making another company whole. Because when it comes down to individual people losing their money, like the people who lost on Binance, they're not being made whole. It's the connected developers and the people who are managing these protocols that get hacked, or maybe inside job, you never know with some of these. Those are the people who are being made whole.
Yeah, and it kind of speaks to something I wanted to ask you about, which is sort of the potential for manipulating markets here, because that a company can sit there, like I have no doubt that JP Morgan or Chase or any of these huge banks could spit out $300 million on the turn of a dime, right? But they also are these international banks with like tons of customers and stuff. But it seems like for these companies that have these massive interests, which you have to assume are worth more than $300 million in the space, that overall is, you know, not as large as global fiat currency. I guess what I'm getting at here is, like, is there a potential for like major investment holders to push and pull these markets as they see fit? That might be an overly simplistic way of asking that question, but I'm curious your thoughts.
I think there's certainly ways which markets are manipulated. The problem is, despite a lot of things being actually rather public and transparent, thanks to the blockchain, in these markets and these companies, there's a lot of stuff that's opaque and that we don't really know. You know, there are some market manipulation investigations going on into Binance. Binance is being investigated in over 24 countries. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous at this point. But the DOJ and IRS, and I think one or two other government agencies are investigating about market manipulation, money laundering. I think there are a few different ways in which this kind of stuff happens, and some are more observable or describable than others. And certainly people who know a lot about, you know, reading the charts and studying trading volumes and order books could tell you more about that side of things than me. But there is, you know, there is one angle which firms that have a lot of money on some of these trading platforms, like Alameda, which is part of FTX, or Jump Crypto, or Cumberland, or some of these other ones. These are pretty obscure firms in some ways, though they're huge in the crypto world, and they're basically the equivalent of high-frequency trading firms. And they have access to the best information, the latest information. They basically know what people are trading on these exchanges before the trades go through, often, so they can anticipate movements in the market. So there's a lot there that one would think, at least they're operating on different footing than, again, this goes back to the gambling or being in a casino, not knowing who you're playing across the table from, that sort of analogy. The other way in which, and I actually think maybe really germane to the kind of work you do, is that the information ecosystem surrounding crypto is just totally unreliable. In fact, every number you hear besides perhaps the price of a token is unreliable. It's widely believed that most exchanges have 80 to 90% wash trading, which means that basically fake trading.
Oh, wow.
Or trading between accounts that people control. This happens very easily on, say, with NFTs. So if I'm on OpenSea and I buy some NFT for 10 Ethereum and I want to drive it up in value, you can't necessarily do this with any NFT, but you act strategically and then you start selling it back and forth between accounts that you control. And then suddenly the NFT has last sold for 100 Ethereum. And then maybe you might give it a discount and put it up for 90 Ethereum. And perhaps a person or a bot that's scanned the platform for discount NFTs will then snap it up. I mean, that is one way this kind of thing definitely manifests itself. But then also to return to the sort of information ecosystem thing, you just can't trust what anyone is saying on social media or any of these numbers. Pump and dumps are endemic. I'm in a Telegram group with almost 3 million people. I mean, granted, I don't know how many of those accounts are real, so to speak, or what counts as real in this space, but I'm in a Telegram account or page with 3 million people. About every 2 weeks, they do a pump and dump on Binance. And it's nearly the same every time. Like, Binance has to know these things are happening, but it's also just a fraction of their volume, so they don't really care. But what happens is they work up their group and say, like, we're going to tell you this coin on Sunday right before, you know, right at this designated time. Get excited. We're all going to make lots of money, buy lots. We have whales coming in. You don't know who these people are. You don't know who the whales are. You don't know anything. And then on Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern or whatever it is, they post the coin in the Telegram chat. I've followed a few of these, and nearly always what happens is, you know, it's very predictable. The coin shoots up a little bit, or at least a percentage that matters, because we're talking about coins that are worth like 1/1000th of a cent. If it goes up 100%, that's a lot, or that makes a difference. But what you have is it'll go up a bunch, but if you're studying the chart, you'll realize it went up right before the official announcement, which means the people running the pump and dump bought in before then everyone else bought in, then the dump happened and the price crashed. So usually people end up in the red, which is also true with most crypto trading in general. I mean, most Bitcoin owners right now are in the red. So this is what I'm talking about when I say like the informational ecosystem surrounding crypto is just, it's all either disinformation, misinformation, or payola of one sort. There's just simply nothing really reliable, and there are no built-in incentives. That's something I also think about a lot, is just the incentives in this industry. There are no incentives really to tell the truth or to ask questions or to not invest in something. So everyone is investing in each other's companies, each other's coins. So I think that's just a major problem before crypto could ever be ready for prime time, because no one is telling the truth, down to the celebrities who are lying to you.
Yeah, and these communities actively kind of scourge off any sort of skepticism or crypticism. There's a term, FUD, F-U-D, fear, uncertainty, doubt. It's like in-group talk, anybody who shows up and says, hey, I don't know, maybe this is a scam. Well, they're just, that's FUD. You don't have to listen to it. It's very, I don't know, man. I don't know how you could look at this stuff and just like not think it's insane.
It's amazing though, because there's people saying, oh, that's just FUD, when you point out something like, hey, you know, BlockFi was fined $100 million last week, and people say, oh, that's just FUD. Like, no, that happened. Or, you know, Tether has been fined tens of millions of dollars by two government agencies and is being investigated by several more. Like, but especially, I mean, the epicenter of FUD is Tether, and we don't need to get too deep into Tether, but you know, it's amazing what people do in terms of either just the powers of denial or moving the goalposts or sort of just shifting around standards. Even the guy who hacked or who stole, you know, nine figures from a DeFi protocol a couple of weeks ago, this guy Sifu, people were saying, oh, well, he's added a lot of value to the community. He should be welcomed back. I saw things like that. Or he's made a lot of value for other people. There's an amazing amount of sort of justification that goes on. I saw this also recently with a guy basically admitted on Twitter that he had been defrauding people by inviting them into NFT communities and encouraging them to join. And some of them were rug pulls, where basically the developers leave with the money. And, you know, again, he was admitting to being complicit in fraud. And some people were saying, well, you know, we need more honest folks like you, or something like that. Or at least you came forward. You know, there's just all, when there's money involved, there's so many, there's so much rationalizing of this kind of behavior to so in so many different directions. But it becomes really shocking, especially if you don't have skin in the game and you're looking at it a bit skeptically from the outside, like, how can you keep doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very human thing. It's hard to admit that we may have been misled or duped. Admitting you're wrong is hard, which is why a lot of people don't do it these days. So I want to pivot a little bit. First off, just very quickly, when we're seeing celebrities and musical artists and stuff jump into NFTs specifically in these marketplaces, you know, certainly these companies, like I was looking at Ethereum Org's page on NFTs, pitching this as a positive thing to artists, regain the things that brought value in your industry, like scarcity and uniqueness. Is that real or is that just bullshit? I mean, it reeked to me, man. And I'm one of those people, I don't have skin in the game. I don't own cryptocurrency. Like, it could all crash tomorrow and I wouldn't lose a lick of sleep. But it's still just like, it was like rotten fish rolling off of the page. Yeah, set me straight if I'm wrong.
I'm afraid I will not set you straight, because I largely agree. I mean, I think one thing I've discovered reporting more on crypto and talking to people in this world and sort of following people's discussions and stuff like that is that there is a spectrum of belief and sort of roles. So, you know, there's some people who are the Bitcoin maximalists or true believers. And then there are some people who act like Bitcoin maximalists because they're pumping their bag, because this is basically an MLM and you need more money coming in the door. You need fresh fiat to pay off the Bitcoin miners who are spending all this money on electricity and hardware. So it becomes sort of functionally the same, because you're sort of complicit in the same manipulative dynamics. I have my doubts that there are that many people who really believe, you know, NFTs are the future, but I don't know. I mean, every day I see people on Twitter who are just saying, like, you know, there today I was joking around about a guy who was saying, you know, you're going to unlock your car and the deed to your house.
Oh, via NFT.
You'll get into your house via an NFT. And it's just ridiculous. Like, no one talks this way about SQL databases or like filing cabinets or some other way of organizing information, which may be a glib way of putting it. But There's a way in which the technology has been fetishized so much, almost in inverse proportion to its usefulness. I mean, as some people will point out to you, while Bitcoin is relatively new, I mean, blockchain in one form or another is basically like 30 years old. And one thing I always say about this industry is the reason why there's so much salesmanship, the reason why the technology is so fetishized, and the reason why celebrities are working so hard to sell this stuff to us is because there is lacking a certain inherent value and innate appeal, I think. I think the commercials, even that during the Super Bowl that were effective, were ones that appealed more to emotion or provocation. Like, none of them really made a positive case for crypto. The Larry David one was funny, but also depressing, but it didn't say anything good about crypto. The Coinbase one was provocative, but didn't say anything about crypto. So like, there are ways in which I think if you really study this stuff, like how it's being sold to people, the promises are very illusory, and the rhetoric and sort of forms of persuasion being used, I think, should really tell you that there's something to be suspicious of.
Yeah, and it's I'm thinking of the Larry David commercial, which the whole point of that commercial was like Larry David's playing a guy that missed the boat on things like electricity and, you know, basic inventions like that. Here he is missing the boat again on cryptocurrency. That doesn't argue that cryptocurrency is good. That is just FOMO. That's like trying to induce a sense, which is maybe like the most American capitalist thing I could think of, which is like appealing to people and getting them to buy things because, damn, you might not have it and that might suck.
Yeah. So you were talking about sort of forced scarcity or artificial scarcity. That's certainly part of all this. To put it simply, one of the great benefits of the internet, and certainly there's a lot of problems with it, is that you have infinite abundance and you can replicate any document or file with perfect fidelity. Now, of course, they want to introduce artificial scarcity, make essentially DRM-like systems to try to enforce those methods of scarcity, when really in practice, we see that they don't work very well, or that some of the intermediary markets like OpenSea have tons of problems. So I think there's a way in which crypto has already failed, but you know, the response to that from the crypto believer is it's still early. And that's also why you need to buy in now. We're still early. That's a meme, is we're still early. Some of this stuff is used almost ironically or self-deprecatingly by some of the people in crypto. I mean, they call themselves degens or degenerates, like especially NFT degens. So there's a way in which there's sort of an ironic playfulness or self-recognition by some people who are dabbling in this stuff. But they're aware, they may even be aware of the risks. Certainly I've talked to some professional traders who are aware of the risks, but think it's, you know, it's worth it. And they can't really afford to sit out. And sometimes they're wagering other people's money and not their own. But I think there's a way in which you could argue that crypto has already failed and that, the use cases that are being promised to us either haven't happened or are being promised down the road. So you hear that with NFTs a lot lately, is that NFTs are going to be useful later. Right now, it's just an expensive JPEG or really a receipt, as you said, for a JPEG. But later, they're going to get you into parties. You're going to commune with a celebrity. You're going to have access to stuff online that you wouldn't normally. Again, online communities are often cited. But, you know, where is that? And why do you need the NFT for that? And is that going to actually happen? So certainly once the initial budgets run out for some of these corporate NFT projects, I doubt, some of these metaverses are going to disappear or are going to be the equivalent of like walking through the ruins of, we're going to walk through the ruins of metaverses where the lights are flickering and things like that. You know, like, I just think there's going to be a form of link rot with a lot of this stuff, whether it's blockchains or NFTs or things or an actual metaverse. There's going to be, there are companies that are going to go bust. There are startups that are going to go under. There's going to be lawsuits. There are going to be probably a couple of people going to jail. Maybe not as many should be charged with crimes. But, you know, if there is a big crash, like I think there might be in the next year, it's inevitable that some of this stuff is going to be far less permanent and enduring than it's sold to us as. And that's a real problem also, because that's supposed to be one of the chief benefits of this stuff, is that, it's there forever.
Yeah. And as we start to wrap up here, you're talking about the future, you know, the people that hold these assets saying, oh, we're still early, you know, we're early in the game. A lot of that is kind of built on sort of the latest buzzword. I haven't done a proper episode on it yet, but Web3, which is sort of this new concept of the internet built on blockchain technology, and it's glued to these products. Now, I am not an expert in Web3. I'm not completely up to speed with everything, so take it with a grain of salt. But to me, Web3 just reeks of kind of the type of thing that already has people feeling really shitty about their lives, which is the hyper-commodification of everything. Data is like, you can't even use the internet. Somebody is like making a dollar off of your back just with your browser history, or things like car makers starting to charge monthly rates for features like push to start engines or remote start engines. I mean, I think Toyota suggested doing that at some point. And it's these things that don't need to have a transaction attached to them.
Yes.
Just the powers that be, the owners of these insanely rich corporations, like, really doing the equivalent of wringing a towel out on the American consumer and just like pressing every little last bit of like financial solvency out of it. Which, again, I'm not an expert. That might be a totally unfair read of Web3, but that is how it strikes me. I'm curious, you know, what you think or what you know and what you think of Web3, and particularly its reliance on this kind of technology. You know, people think that they're getting in early because this Web3 is going to be the new thing, but it's really tied to this stuff that has serious problems at its foundational core.
Sure. And, you know, once again, we find ourselves in agreement. I'm not going to really refute anything you said, but I think Web3 is largely about what I mentioned earlier, which is sort of constructing this parallel financial system. But more practically, it's what you said. It's the commodification of everything, and it's the financialization of more and more of everyday life and more of our interactions, transactions. It's applying sort of a transactional layer to our internet lives, to our social lives. So yeah, the idea is that you go around the world, or you go around daily life with a crypto wallet, which is ostensibly secure, and you are basically paying in and out of it all, and taking and making transactions in and out of it all day for anything from, you know, buying a new skin in a game to buying an NFT or trying to interact with anyone online. I mean, there's sort of infinite possibilities that they see, and along with the fact that they want you to be highly sort of leveraged and financialized and be, you know, earning various types of crypto that you're then staking or investing in DeFi pools, or then you're then using to buy into other crypto investment schemes. I mean, there's really in some ways no end if you're making fake money and you're trying to make more fake money. There's no end to sort of how deep you can go and how complex some of this stuff can get. And I think that's also what really gets at it. I mean, something like 84%, I think, of people in this country don't have any crypto or not buying into any of this stuff. I don't expect it. I mean, I do wonder what the, you know, what crypto will crest at in terms of market share, but we haven't talked about the innumerable things that are wrong with our mainstream banking system. But one of the things you have to say with crypto is that it sort of takes the status quo and offers a worse alternative while claiming that it's liberating. And I think that's what people have to address first, sort of the first rhetorical step you have to take, or ideological step, when you're tackling this stuff. And so I think you also have to confront some of the basic claims also, and say it's not very decentralized, though I don't think decentralization is a good unto itself. It's not secure. It's not very private. And it's increasingly complex as you have more protocols and currencies and things to get involved in. There's no way, you know, our elderly relatives will be able to ever sort of be a capable consumer in the crypto market. That's just a fact. I don't think I could, because what it really means, especially when these markets run 24/7, is it means thinking about how much money you have all day. And, you know, we all would like more money, but also there's something to be said for not having to constantly be thinking about your bankroll or you know, is, you know, the currency that my whole income is based on up 3 cents today, or is it not? You know, the kinds of fears that can sort of take over you in the psychic mindset you might enter when you financialize everything is pretty grim. And I think, you know, one thing I also think about as sort of a point of comparison is, think about in 30 Rock, when Jack Donaghy is talking to Kenneth the Page, and he's saying, you know, they're talking about how they see the world. Kenneth sees everyone as Muppets, and Jack Donaghy sees everyone with a price over their head, and every object too. That's how I sort of think about Web3 and its vision of the world. It's everything is tokenized or has a price attached to it. Everything is implicated in a financial transaction. And that to me is like surveillance capitalism, but far worse. I didn't think it could get much worse. I thought surveillance capitalism was sort of an amazing neoliberal paradigm, if you wanted right. to commodify so much of daily life. But there's potential here for even more of that. And it's all being done in the name of sort of a libertarian, right-wing-ish liberation that, you know, is not going to come. It may come for a few people. It may come for the Bitcoin maxis living on Bitcoin Beach. But for the rest of El Salvador, it's not going to come.
I've been talking with Jacob Silverman. He's a staff writer at The New Republic and a really great voice on cryptocurrency, NFTs, all things blockchain. I'll have links to where you can find his writing, his profiles, and keep up with what he's doing. Jacob, I'm really happy you were able to join me on the show today, and I'm sure that we only got to like a small percentage point of what this universe really entails. Before I ask you the final shitpost closing question that always gets asked here, given that there is so much of this universe we missed, if there was maybe one final piece of wisdom that people listening to the show, I'm thinking of like my dad occasionally listens, he probably doesn't know a ton about this stuff. Like if there's one parting piece of wisdom to take away here, what is it?
I'd say just be skeptical and figure out where is the money coming from and who really wields power in this kind of world. Just ask the questions you would ask of any powerful industry, which crypto is an industry, and it's largely funded by and controlled by billionaire venture capitalists and crypto exchange CEOs. So, you know, just ask those questions, put bracket the hype to the side or the promises that are offered to you, and ask the questions you would ask of sort of any dubious investment or any politician. And that's the kind of eye you need to bring to this crypto industry.
Jacob, what's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
So I was trying to think of a good answer to this, something very, you know, hip or niche, but I have to admit, you know, I'm a stereotypical Brooklyn dad of small children. So when my kids go to bed, I often spend a lot of evenings just listening to music and watching old music videos on YouTube. That's sort of my pandemic thing or quarantine thing. There also are some really wonderful comments. If you've never really delved into YouTube comments for a Black Sabbath video from 1983 or something like that, there are all these people just pouring their hearts out about their, you know, their glory days watching these various bands, or, you know, their lost lover who used to listen to so-and-so. And there's kind of a sweetness and an earnestness there that you don't encounter that much on the internet, which is so irony poisoned and everything like that. So it's been a lot of fun. Pleasant evenings discovering old music. Thanks, YouTube. Thanks, Google.
And tell me what you're working on with Ben McKenzie. You mentioned him earlier.
Yeah, so I was just on a parental leave, and now I'm back writing some for The New Republic, but I'm also working with Ben McKenzie, actor and writer who's gotten into the crypto world. We're basically writing a book about crypto and fraud, and broadly speaking, and it'll cover some of the things I discussed here. We're writing some articles too. We have a monthly column basically for Slate about crypto. So there'll be a more official announcement hopefully soon, and some other things we'd like to announce. But right now Ben is taking a detour through his career and being a journalist for a little while, and we're working on this stuff together, and it's been really fun.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to what you two produce next. I think your writing to date has been incredibly insightful and really, you know, precisely and I think fairly pokes holes where, you know, the mirage is lacking.
I mean, one last thing I would say is also just that there's a lot of money here. So, and there are plenty of people who are singing the crypto tune or pro Bitcoin. Like, you know, there may be more skeptics now, but, you know, in terms of the power dynamic, this industry deserves all the skepticism it earns, I think, or it receives.
Oh, definitely. I will never argue against questioning massive forces of power in society. Jacob, thanks so much for joining.
I appreciate it. Thanks.